It's just 2 weeks out and we've got your gifts at Macy's One-Day Sale. With over 25,000 deals of the day, in-store and online. Like PJs for the whole fam, now $4.99 to $19.99. Have a jet setter on your gift list? Samsonite luggage is 60 to 65% off. How about a Home Chef? Give a KitchenAid Classic Stand Mixer for just $189.99. Tuesday and Wednesday at Macy's. Savings off sale prices. Exclusions apply. Macy's Star Rewards members can earn towards Star Money. Ask your store associate or visit Macy's.com/Star Money for details.
Thomas, and I'm on a life mission to empower communities with solutions that help people overcome isolation and despair and rekindle a passion for living. Each episode, we're joined by international experts who inspire hope and offer real guidance. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. Today, we are going to be talking about a number of things all around the theme of making meaning. I'm joined by Christopher Jakimic, calling in from Las Vegas, and he's a section chief of the Quality Assurance 99th Communications Squadron of the Nellis Air Force Base, and we're going to be hearing from him in just a bit. But first, I just want to kind of frame our conversation today by really introducing the need for very specific types of support that can also help people make meaning during their dark times after suicide loss or after suicide crisis. And we're going to be talking about the power of peer support. And in prepping for this conversation today, I was really thinking about how important this really is within military service culture. And how peer support really fits the warrior ethos, the idea of I've got your back. And in the process, people in peer support can forge a strong bonds that they are familiar with in their service, that sense of camaraderie, pulling together. And through that, there's a normalization of what each person has been experiencing because those experiences have been shared. The Military Medicine article of 2005 by Hunt and others really spoke to this about how this shared experience can foster hope through pathways to resilience. This quote, you know, I don't expect my friends to understand what I've been through, but when I'm around veterans, like-minded veterans, I don't have to explain myself. They already know. And so this peer support method of augmenting maybe needed mental health services or other types of treatment can be a real important part for people to get back on track, and especially after suicide bereavement. That's such a long road. It's complicated. It's really hard. And I think that peer support is an answer. It's a very, very powerful thing. I know it was true for me when I was going through my own suicide bereavement process. It was the support groups that kept me going. And I think it's because a large part of that is this idea of reciprocity. This idea that, you know, I went through something tough, but then I learned some things and I found my way through. And then I stay involved. I stay involved as a peer because then I could use my experience to help others. And so that's a little bit of where we're going today. So it's now my real pleasure to introduce my new colleague. We just got connected a little while ago, and we had a conversation or two. And I said, Christopher, I really want to have you on my show. I think your message is really relevant to our audience on many levels. I think people are really interested and want to know how to help around the conversations around military and veteran suicide. I think also there's a lot of people very interested in the power of peer support. And then also, you know, I think we have that shared experience of losing a sibling that I also don't think gets talked enough about. So a little bit about your organization, the Military and Veteran Survivors of Loved Ones to Suicide. was founded recently, and it's a peer-based organization based in Las Vegas, and you help facilitate face-to-face survivors of suicide loss support groups for military members, veterans, and their families, which is really awesome. Just recently founded in 2018, in honor of your brother, the Lance Corporal Adam Jakimic, who is a Marine Corps service member. I was an active duty member and served in many areas. So I'm very pleased to have you here. You in your short time of getting really involved in this area, you have done a number of things. You've gotten involved with AFSP, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. We had them on last year, TAPS. And you've been recognized on a number of occasions for your service in the U.S. Air Force. So please join me here, Christopher, and welcome to the Hope Illuminated podcast.
Oh, thank you for the very warm introduction, Sally. I really appreciate the connection. It's been wonderful so far, and just sharing our stories together and getting to know each other and being a united voice in helping others work through the grief of suicide loss and how to potentially prevent, you know, further losses through telling our stories and just these shared experiences that you talk about.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, I know it's hard. You've experienced quite a bit of trauma and loss in your life. But if you would, please go back and share a little bit about your journey that led you to the work that you do today.
Yeah, so my journey is I joined the United States Air Force in September of 1999, a little bit after a journey through high school, figuring out what I wanted to do, whether I was going to go to college in Wisconsin or move on from there. And I just happened to, you know, find the Air Force as something that was very, very beneficial. So I joined in September of 99, went off to training, at basic training at Lackland Air Force Base, and really found a love for it and the connectedness almost immediately, being recognized just for future potential and everything that I could do. One of the few remaining service members that's still in active duty has served on 9/11. That's a very very interesting day in my life. That could be a story in itself. But then through the careers, you know, it's taken me to Las Vegas, Korea, Kuwait, Germany, and Afghanistan twice. You know, just having those journeys and the connectedness along the way. I got into suicide loss when I first lost my grandmother in 2006. That was a tough time because it was right before I headed off to Korea. And had to deal with the mission over there. So it took a while to bereave that. There were other losses within my life prior to that that really kind of set me back. And this was a time where mental health care in the military wasn't talked about too much. We were just kicking off the wars. They were prolonging both in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we weren't really seeing the true impact of it. So the attention was there, but it wasn't as open as it is now. My brother Adam would join the Marines in 2005, right before I went off to Korea, you know, and he'd share a similar experience. It would change his life, the connectedness, you'd meet new friends. And that's really what it became is we had our family, but that was your new family. Those were your brothers and sisters that looked out from you day in and day out. So I would return with my wife to Las Vegas in September 2010. We would go with that, start a new job, and that really kind of elevated my career. It took off pretty rapidly after that with multiple promotions, multiple awards within the service to where I was being recognized at the highest level. In 2014, I wanted to pay it back and became what was called an Air Force First Sergeant. Our job in the mantra of the Air Force First Sergeant is my job is people, everyone is my business. So you're there as this mentor and this caregiver to everyone who serves and their families included on that. So my day-to-day with that was really just taking care of people and their families, whether it be financial, whether it be a mental health crisis, whether it be bereavement or anything simple that came with it day in day. Very taxing job, but very rewarding at the same time. It would be, I would be head off to the Air Force Senior Non-Commissioned Officer Academy in the summer of 2017. We would go through that, and that's where I would learn of my brother's passing to suicide. It was right after I had given a speech about Scipio Africanus and his war in the Punic Wars with Hannibal. And so I remember that day pretty clearly. But what happened then, it was pretty profound, is the rapidness of the support that came to me once that loss happened was quite amazing. Is from my local leadership out in Las Vegas, coming to the aid of my family at my home, getting me back from Alabama to Las Vegas in less than 12 hours. It was really, you know, thankful that I had that support. And as we say it in the military, that I had a lot of people that had my six.
Tell us a little bit more about your brother, Adam.
So we're about 28 months apart, really growing up. You know, as you hear these stories about siblings, is that your first and your longest relationship with your brother or sister. We're just a bunch of goofy kids that just loved life and loved experiencing things. He had such a creative bone, making anything he could think of out of Legos. My brother was a forward thinker. He was an artist. He loved music, loved art, loved poetry, loved working on vehicles, loved photography. He was always fond of taking images of national parks such as Yosemite. That was kind of his solace place where he went and found peace. But he struggled. You know, war changed him. He deployed twice to Iraq, and that really kind of impacted him quite a bit, is seeing some of the things that had gone on over there. And then, you know, developing some negative coping mechanisms when he returned. It changed him, as it changes the majority of us who deploy to overseas locations. And just, it could even just be the experience of being there, not actually in combat, but things that happen and things that you see, some of these secondary traumas that you go through, or these traumas that are there that you hear about, that really changes your psyche.
Yeah, it sounds like that was a really tough time, and it happened right around the time that he died, or was it going over a longer period of time?
A longer period of time. So he would deploy there in around 2006, 2007. He'd be wedged between Fallujah and Ramadi, supporting some helicopter operations. And so I'd be in Korea at the same time. We would discuss our deployments together. I would go back to Afghanistan in 2014, and there were some times where – so he was stationed in Miramar at San Diego at the time, where I was the closest family member to be able to respond outside his spouse. So what the military connection is, I would go down there and help my brother. And as an airman, I would have these conversations with Marines and really just have frank, candid conversations like, okay, I know the story with my brother. I need to hear the other side of the story of what's going on, what sort of services are being provided to him. Military members, we are trained in firearms pretty thoroughly. So, I mean, there was that, is removing lethal means from his home at the time when he was going through some sort of crisis, and taking it to the Marine Armory to kind of prevent any tragedy from happening at the time. So that worked. And at my last deployment in 2014, I went to Afghanistan with the team, and I was there, and that's when I learned my brother was going through a bit of a crisis. So I would return in the springtime of that year to come home and take care of him, help take care of him with my family.
My heart goes out to you to be that far away and realize that someone so close to you is having such a hard time. And you talked about the nature of the relationship of siblings, that first and longest relationship, but I think the grief for siblings is also has some unique qualities versus some other relationships, you know, parents or children or friends. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of what it meant to you to lose a brother to suicide, and talk about what what how you coped with the kind of the sibling, the lost sibling part of that.
It really took me back. You get that story, and we hear it from time to time from other sibling survivors, that we often are the forgotten mourners. You tend to go to the children right away. The parents, is we're looking out for the parents, which is rightfully so, because they need the support too. But then you get isolated as a sibling, because all the attention is being put on that way, to where, like, my brother and I, we were our own best friends for at least 15 years of our life. Is that's what we had. It was my first playmate. Everything we wanted to do surrounded around that. And even my two sisters too, you know, Adam and I have two younger sisters, and the impact it's had on them as well has been profound. It's brought my sisters closer together. It's brought me closer with my sisters, because we can share those experiences, and sharing the good times and remembering the life that he lived, and the goofy moments we had, the happy moments, just reflecting back on pictures and all the joy that was in life. You know, let's not dwell on how my brother passed. I want to think about how the life he lived and what he did in the servitude of this country, making it better, the impact he left on so many others. I mean, the outpouring of support at his memorial service was just profound, with several of his Marine brothers and sisters flying in from all over the United States. And friends that I got to reconnect with that knew my brother and we grew up as kids.
That's a very important tribute to his life, the work that you're doing now. Can you share with me if there was a moment in time when you felt called to this mission to provide the peer-to-peer support for other military service members and veterans and their families around suicide? Do you have a Chris moment when you had this aha?
It probably took me till about spring of 2018. And the journey is the immediate impact I had when I lost my brother was, you know, I got that huddle around me for that stabilization type support. Lieutenant Colonel Coletti, Steve Coletti, and his wife Carly, they were profound in helping my family out. So when I lost my brother, my parents were actually at my home in Las Vegas. And then just having the unit support is, we had 30 guys and gals from my immediate unit show up to my house and just started taking over, providing my family with meals and everything. And that's when I was serving in the role as the first sergeant. So a lot of the experiences I would have from 2014 up until that point was, I was doing a lot of crisis intervention for mental health, whether it be a suicide ideation or attempt. That was kind of my wheelhouse is, there were a lot of experiences with that and seeing the families go through the losses and having it happen to my own family was kind of profound. But it would continue to kind of snowball where I'd go back into the position after taking a little bit of time off. We'd respond to the three hurricanes that happened in the United States during that time frame, getting there and doing our rightful mission for the Air Force. The shockwave kind of came again, too, in October of 2017, where the Route 91 shooting happened in Vegas and had a lot of profound impact on our airmen. We did very well as an installation and as a base with getting some disaster mental health teams in there. But then I would experience after that kind of additional trickle-down effects is I would lose two other peers, one direct peer, a fellow first sergeant, to suicide in March of 2018. And then on the day of his funeral is I would learn that one of my former airmen, an individual that I deployed with to Afghanistan, would take the lives of his family and then himself. And that really set me back.
That's just so many layers of loss and trauma, and like you can't even catch a breath. And then it's not a small one, but it's another big one that you're having to deal with. What has helped you? Has this work of starting this group and this effort, has that been healing for you?
it's been very healing. I think there's a lot to be said about survivors helping other survivors with the shared experience, especially military members. You see it, you know, you see it in a lot of studies. There's things within the military that are out there that talk about it. Our resiliency programs that we've started to build up since the mid-2000s, when we noticed a lot of these negative trends, whether it be comprehensive soldier fitness, comprehensive airman fitness, and really building resiliency into our culture for when the unexpected does happen, so we can push through it and experience post-traumatic growth. Now, being a sibling survivor, I didn't learn about the Tragedy Assistance Program for survivors until I really dug into it and just happened to stumble upon it by reading some of the materials that I had in front of me as a first sergeant. And I reached out to them, and it was immediate support. It's been nothing but amazing since, is getting with such a large group of people who have a shared experience and a shared connection with losses. And even at their seminars, having the breakout groups specifically for parents or siblings or spouses or children has been profound. And then just linking up with other organizations such as the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Vets for Warriors, that was started by a Major General Mark Graham in the Army, who had experienced a loss of a son in combat, but also a loss of a son to suicide. It kind of drew me to it.
Yeah, and I will highlight all of these resources on the notes page of our podcast. And I just want to emphasize that Kim Rocco and TAPS are doing amazing work all throughout the country and bringing people together in really meaningful ways to connect around their losses and just to provide that sense of support for one another. And then Vets for Warriors, I'm a huge fan of the Grahams. They are never stopping. Their hearts are so big, and I'm just thrilled to see that peer line also going forward and building out. Can you talk a little bit more for me about what you mean by post-traumatic growth? And I also, you know, in some survivors of loss circles, I listen to the tension around how could I possibly have growth after such a tragedy has happened to me. I can't have growth because my life could never recover from this. Can you talk a little bit about that tension between post-traumatic growth and survivor guilt, or just kind of the depth and the complexity of suicide loss?
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of it being the ripple effect in talking about how many people it actually impacts, and especially those that are closest. You know, Julie Sorrell does a great diagnosis and dive into this, along with John Jordan, about how many people are actually impacted by a suicide loss. And, you know, talking about the initial data was saying that there were six that were profoundly impacted, and then recent data showing that there's more like 135 when it comes down to it. And there's some arguments and some theories that are being developed, especially for the military, that talks about that because of the connectedness, a permanent change of stations, going from base to base or duty station to duty station, along with combat deployments and other sorts of military training in there, that the number may actually be higher for the military just because of the way we move around and the way we stay connected.
That makes sense.
The growth is once you learn and you can accept on how to get out of the catastrophizing phase, that there could be good that can come from this, is experiencing these losses makes you a actual stronger person because you're grieving through it. You don't get over it. You can't climb up above it. You can't bury yourself under it. The only way to experience this sort of grief is to go through it. And it takes time. It's different for everybody. There's not a timeline to say, hey, it's going to take you 30 days to grieve this loss. You'll hear comments that'll get thrown at you, be like, oh, why don't you just get over it? Well, that doesn't help. You never get over it. It becomes a part of you and just kind of changes you. And you know, you'll have these waves of emotions that'll come in from the guilt is getting on the why, what could I have done? What more could I have done to save my loved one? And some people get stuck at that phase. But then the shame of, the taboo-ness of openly talking about it, a suicide loss, as in it's not a part of reality when in fact it is. And the shame of seeking, shame and fear of seeking mental health care to say, hey, look, I need some help. There's the quote that we hear all the time. It's okay to not be okay. We can have good days. We can have bad days. It's when you start to get into your grief process and realize that there you can restore hope, meaning, and purpose in your life after a suicide loss, then that's when you'll start to experience the growth. Is the depression, the anxiety will start to wane off when you find this higher purpose. And when I talk about this higher purpose, I mean about honoring your loved one, honoring the life that they lived, their dash, not the start date, not the end date, but the dash. And what can you do to honor their life and the good that they've done?
I love that, honoring the dash. Yep, that's it. How do you, and in your particular situation, honor the brotherhood, honor the service that was given. How do you do that? What are some other components of post-traumatic growth that you've experienced or that you've noticed in others post a tragedy like suicide loss?
I look at people that are out there sharing their stories. There's one book that I recently read, and I got tuned onto it by Anderson Cooper. It's a fellow military veteran by the name of James Hatch, and he writes a book called Touching the Dragon, where it discusses he was an individual who had many direct action combat deployments and was involved in the Bo Bergdahl raid. And he tells a phenomenal story. And the line that really resonated me as a military member is in we have each other's backs in war, and it's this tribal type mentality. But the one line that got to me really is and allowed me to open up and get help is your buddies don't get medals for taking their fellow service members to mental health care. And then he talks about, we have to get over this shame and stigma and fear of seeking help because it is actually healthy and it's the right thing to do. There's some folks that we call in some of our spheres in the military that the human body is the human weapon system. It's the most important weapon in the military is the person, not the machine, not the capability. It's the human mind and the human body and the human person. So if we can develop that through holistic approaches, balancing the physical, social, spiritual, and mental domains of wellness, we create actually a better warfighter, a more resilient warfighter when we get in tune with all our domains of wellness.
So important to say over and over again, and we hear this in business too, your most important asset in your company are your human beings, and their most important asset for most businesses today is their mind. And so how do we cultivate the strongest minds possible that are making the best decisions, that are persevering over the long haul? How do we do that? Let's turn a little bit now to some of the research that you're familiar with, some of the studies that you've been reading about military grief, about peer support, wherever you want to start.
Absolutely. So where I got started is it was just a random search on there. It kind of guided me on my journey to say, hey, is this right? Do we need a peer support group in a local area that meets regularly that specifically addresses the needs of military members and their families? And a lot of the studies I reached into said yes. I look back to a 2015 RAND study on suicide postvention that talks about that. And it gets into better training our casualty assistance officers to provide these sort of services. So, doing a glance on that, it illuminated peer support, but then it said, hey, we need more research and more data on this. Is we understand that these are out here. There are the programs such as TAPS, and it references TAPS quite often in there. about, they're the ones in the nation that are kind of leading up this charge. But what it's, you know, the jury was kind of out on the peer support because the DOD wasn't doing it much. We've got a lot of individual counseling. We've got a lot of support for other type of resources, but there's not really a bereavement and loss support group. Now there is since 2015. But then there's been more recent research by Jill Harrington, John Jordan, Kim Ruocco, of course, that you discussed earlier, Julie Sorrell, about the surviving military families and loss. You've got discussions by Dr. Shauna Springer, who's a mentor of mine, and she's one of the senior directors at TAPS, where it talks about suicide postvention. Reflections on these veteran suicides, resilience, and forming these tribes, and along with some recent studies by Dr. Pack talking about suicide postvention for U.S. military. So the data is getting out there, and it's showing the viability of peer support and the connectedness. The shared experiences of combat, the shared experiences of suicide losses, if we can discuss that together in a non-attributional, non-clinical setting in some regards, is we create better people and we work through our losses a little bit better. Because there's that common bond, that common understanding on, hey, you know, I may be an airman, soldier, sailor, or marine. We speak a little bit of different DOD languages, but we've experienced similar types of losses, and we're grieving together. You know, there's organizations that are out there that are doing it by other means as well too. So the data is out there, but what are we doing with that? Are we putting the data into action? Is kind of the call that's out there.
So tell us about how that research helped you move forward and form your own peer support group, and kind of how that's working. And do you have any success stories that you can share, obviously without divulging any kind of personal information?
Of course. So a lot of the research kept just pointing me towards peer support. I'd go on to read a lot of the books written by other survivors, and it would just discuss, it's like, yes, I went to individual counseling, however, is I found the most connection through suicide loss survivor groups. What I noticed, at least here in the local Las Vegas area, is we had sort of a void. We've got some groups, we've got some outstanding groups out here, but there wasn't specifically anything to address our veteran population within suicide bereavement. We talk about the Western states having elevated rates. So where I got into that was I reached out to our local office of suicide prevention. And it just happened to be that their director here, Mr. Rick Egan, is a veteran himself. So just reaching out to him and saying, hey, Rick, this is something I want to do here in the local area. I see a little bit of void in our community. What's your thoughts? And within about 10 minutes, the phone rings. He says, absolutely. Let's sit down and discuss this. Matter of fact is we're one of the cities that are on SAMHSA's Mayor Challenges team to address military families, veterans, and suicide within America's communities. So he's like, why don't you come out? We'll talk together, and I'd like you to help out the team. And so that was profound, just to be invited to that. We use some terms sometimes in the military. We call our base or our installation is, that's inside the wire to us. So we need to connect the outside-the-wire community that supports us, our veterans, our daily living, to the inside-the-wire community to kind of leverage and build these public or public-private partnerships to handle the issue together.
Oh, that's powerful. So paint us a picture, if you will, of how this, what this looks like. So set the scene for us. Where are these support groups held? What's the feeling in there? What's the process? I think about back to my own support group experiences. I can imagine it absolutely to the detail. And it was 14 years ago. It was a darkly lit room in the basement of a church. You know, people would bring all kinds of baked goods. And so the whole room smelled like herbal tea and gingerbread. And we would sit in this really big rectangle and probably 20 or 30 of us on an average night, and it was calm, and there was there was mourning, but there was also joy when we saw one another and we give each other big hugs. And I'm just wondering if the military version is similar.
Quite similar. We just speak a different language. You know, we'll throw out acronyms a lot, or we'll speak and, you know, hey, there may be a little few more profanities since we're not in a church, just because that's the nature of some of the military speak. Yes, we're respectful to one another. There's inter-service rivalries where we're joking around, you know, things like that. But ultimately, it's this brotherhood, and it's you kind of let your guard down a little bit that, hey, you've got this. Is this other person understands me? Is it understands what I've gone through? Okay, this person's deployed. This person's been to the Middle East. This person gets it, gets the challenges that are abound to military families. So there's a lot of positive communication in there. It's very upbeat. There is some anger, I would say, but I do my best to quell that right away to find the goodness or hunt the good stuff. Okay, so tell me about your bad experiences, but I want to know what went right with your experiences with your service or with the VA. You know, what did it give you that gave you a better outlook on life that was hopeful? It's not all down and dreary. I am very thankful for my service in the Air Force and the skills that it's given me to this. And I'm sure soldiers, sailors, and our Coast Guardmen and even Marines can say the same. Is there's a lot of positiveness that came out of it. You know, I can talk to my brothers and sisters about it, or I stay connected to where if I'm having a crisis, I can pick up the phone and I can call one of my brothers that I served with and talk myself through something that I'm going through in life.
That's exactly where it is. That is, you know, you lost a brother. And then through this process of pulling together, it's not the same kind of brotherhood, but you've gained a broader brotherhood or broader brotherhood, sisterhood, you know, that you can lean on now because of these deep shared experiences where, you know, I always say it's, you know, when we're vulnerable in front of each other, our trust for one another deepens. And that, you know, a lot of times that's not, you don't have permission to do that in the military, but these support groups, these peer support groups provide the safety for that, give permission for people to be honest and authentic with their pain, with their anger, and be present to one another in those difficult moments.
Yeah, you're right. And what they've done in this form, too, is it causes active duty reservists and even veterans to get into some purposeful action. To be that voice out there and really the national mood to say, hey look, we appreciate what the civilian base is doing, but we need a little bit more than, hey, thanking me for my service. Let's get some purposeful action on there. Here's my problem is hire me. You know, let me show my experiences that I can be in these leadership positions out there. I'm not broken. PTSD doesn't break me. It may crack me, but it doesn't break me. And a matter of fact is I may come out of it better through some of these ailments that we have in mental health because I know how to work through this. I know how to get through this. And I'm better. I'm more resilient because of working through this. So we're not a detriment to society. We're an asset.
Mm-hmm, totally. Yeah, and all of the training and the teamwork it can be very translatable to all kinds of other things that societies need, and I think you know we're learning more and more about how to translate those skills and experiences into some other places when military is transitioning back to civilian life. What else? What are some other purposeful actions that folks who have been traumatized by suicide? What are some other ways that they can turn that energy into purposeful action in their community?
Getting involved with their local American Foundation for Suicide Prevention chapter or some of your other veterans organizations, you know, sign up to be a peer mentor or peer supporter through Vets for Warriors or Objective Zero is another good one that's out there. Illuminate the issue that it is a national issue in not only the veterans sphere, but within America itself. Provide the positiveness and and talk about what's worked for you. You know, highlight self-care. Realistically, you know, we go through this fast-paced world to where we're always connected, always going. Just take a few moments to take care of yourself. Find something that does give you meaning and purpose with your life. And if you're not, change it. You'll find those connections. And there's a lot of great work that's going on. That's what we want as vets is don't just want a stuffy room to where, you know, it's some of these older models that are out there. Is let me be a part of something where I act with other vets and have purposeful action. Like Team Red, White, and Blue going out there doing Old Glory relays. We've got another one out here in Las Vegas. They're called Merging Vets and Players, where it's veterans that discuss with professional athletes and former professional athletes on kind of the shared experience to where we go through our injuries, but then we get together every Friday night. We do an MMA-style workout and then have a fireside-type chat where we share our experiences. So finding the
Sounds
niche
phenomenal.
That works for you. It is.
Yeah, Team Rubicon, I think, is another one where people are with past military service get together and do some really important and often challenging volunteer work in their community. That's another great resource. So it doesn't have to always be a mental health resource that helps people make meaning. Sometimes it's some of these other types of initiatives that really just gets people out and about and with peers doing something cool, whether that's for their own enjoyment and building community or whether that's serving in some other way. Can you talk a little bit more, since people might not always know, and it's such a great resource that's accessible all over the country, can you talk a little bit more about how people can get involved with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention as volunteers and specifically what you have done with them and how that has also helped you make meaning?
Yeah. You can just go to AFSP.org, and it'll allow you to link up to whatever your local chapter is. They're in most major cities around the nation, and what they provide, too, is that awareness piece. It's trifold, both prevention and postvention on there. So they host a lot of training, such as Safe Talk, that's run by LivingWorks, that talks about how to understand the signs of suicide and how to properly discuss this with somebody who may be going through that immediate crisis. We think of it as mental health first aid, you know, CPR for a mental health crisis. And the more we can educate on that, the better we can save some lives. In counter to that, outside of military resources, they're the ones who provide the bulk of the training to form suicide loss support groups in the United States. And so they do peer support group facilitator training on a pretty regular basis. They happen almost once a month all around the nation. And it's a three-day course that really, after you've experienced the loss or you're ready to do this, you're a clinician that wants to set this up in your local area, they bring in experts around the nation who've been doing this for quite a while to really provide you those skills on running your own support group. And then once that's established, there's a monthly chat you can call in to say, hey, this is what's working, this is what isn't working, and their staff is absolutely phenomenal. So through that, you build your tribe as well, too. So when I went and got mine, I flew from Las Vegas to Chicago to get the training. And our local AFSP chapter for Southern Utah and Southern Nevada actually sponsored me to go to that once I said, hey, look, here's what I want to do. I want to bring another support group to our area. Go. Here's your funding. There's a little bit of connectedness back home with that. You know, I was born in that area. It's regional to Wisconsin where I grew up at, so there was a lot of meaning-making behind that. But I met others. I met people who were within the VA that were there for the training as well, too, to bring it to their locales in Wisconsin and Illinois, and just really a lot of power in that. So we're going to have a training out here in Las Vegas in February to bring in more support groups and allow me to link up with a lot of wonderful individuals such as Karen Hyatt and Michelle Freeman that are running our chapter out here that are really making things happen. So coming up here on the 17th of November is known as the International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day. we're going to do a breakout group at ours here in Las Vegas, specifically for military families and veterans. It's one of the first time ever that we're having a breakout session like that outside of just the general loss. So we can discuss that more in depth a little bit, and we can provide those families with linkages to more resources that can help out with their prolonged care.
Great. Yes, I think the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has done a wonderful job to help people transition to from, you know, something's awful has happened to me. What do I do to get my feet back on the ground? And then what do I do moving forward to make meaning out of this? So you mentioned the facilitator course. I've also taken that suicide loss support group facilitator course. It's excellent. And so that's one way people can make meaning is that they can start up these groups in their local communities to provide that support for people in that acute bereavement stage. But maybe that seems like too much of a heavy lift. That's quite a bit of a responsibility and accountability to do something like that. They also have walks where you can go out and put a team together of friends and family and community and walk together in honor of the life that was lived. You can also fundraise for AFSP, and that can be something of how you contribute. And you're right, the International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day is a powerful way that people come together. So I'm going to do a brief recap here, and then I'm going to come back around to see if you have final thoughts and ideas of what people might do moving forward to turn a tragedy of suicide loss into healing, into solidarity, and possibly even into this thing we're calling post-traumatic growth. So we talked about in the beginning about your incredibly sad story of losing your brother Adam. Actually, very recently, Christopher, when I think about how short of a time that you have had to do all the things you've done, you are a warrior on a mission here. You are a brother on a mission. And so I feel like, you know, Adam's looking at you and, you know, real proud for all that you're doing here to help so many people. We talked a little bit about kind of the uniqueness of sibling grief around suicide. And I neglected to mention one of my powerful mentors in this area is Dr. Michelle Lynn Gust. I think when I first found myself in this place looking for answers, looking for anything, you know, I stumbled upon her book on suicide bereavement of siblings. And I just found it so incredibly helpful to hear another sister talk about the impact on her and kind of how she got through it, because we all are often the forgotten mourners. We're also in a place where we're either taking care of our parents or younger people, the children left behind. And so sometimes we get lost out of the mix. So it's important for us to find a way to support one another. And I know that there is a new book that's in the works that some of us have contributed chapters to by Dr. Lena Hillman that is, again, specifically on this and on stories of siblings coming through. We talked quite a bit about this idea of making meaning, about survivors helping others, this idea of reciprocity, the powerful work of Kim Ruocco and TAPS as leading that, as well as Veterans for Warriors, and really try to unpack what that meant a little bit. So looking at it as coming through the catastrophic phase, and I love how you put this, that we're not getting buried under the grief, we're also not glossing over it, we are going through it. And when we face it squarely, we find sometimes this glimmer of purpose and, as you said, honoring the dash. We find a way to honor our loved ones, not the start date, not the end date, but what happens in between, really important way to understand grief. We don't have the mourning. We don't have the weight of grief if we don't have the love, if we don't have the honoring. So those two things go hand in hand, and it's, you know, understanding that, you know, it's part of the human experience and that we can learn a lot from it. We then shifted our conversation a little bit more to the research involved, and you cited a number of studies that I'm hoping you can send me the citations for, and I'll plop them in the show notes, that really have helped you understand how to transition the science into action. How do we take the things that we're learning in the research and apply them to things like peer support in suicide bereavement? And so that's a really great framework for all of us to think about, is that how does science play a role in informing what we're doing to help ourselves and one another? And then we talked about your model. We talked about the model that is still pretty brand new, but it's coming from a place of big heart and a lot of informed practices. I love how you talked about inside the wire being connected with outside the wire, connecting the military to the community and connecting them to one another, and how there really does need to be a safe space at Just Suicide Bereavement. I described my experience, and you said, well, ours is similar, but we swear more and also maybe show more anger, but also some off-color humor. So maybe we should stay in our own space. And I agree that there needs to be that kind of safe space where people can feel comfortable to do that, and permission to be vulnerable with one another, where they don't feel so exposed to the rest of the community. And then we talked a lot about resources and purposeful action, and really about how important it is in these resources for veterans to connect with one another. And for the community to realize that thank you for your service is fine, but it really doesn't do the trick. What are some other meaningful ways that we can provide space for veterans to connect to one another, whether that's through employment, whether that's through an understanding and conversations around PTSD that's beyond brokenness, whether that's being involved in some of these non-mental health groups by default actually improve mental health, like Team Rubicon and some other places where veterans are just getting together and doing fun things or other types of community giving. And then finally, we spent a lot of time talking about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is just offers so much for so many people about ways to get involved, whether it's as light as showing up for a one-hour walk and getting connected to your community in that way, to all the way through getting a three-day training so that you can learn how to facilitate a survivors of loss support group in your own community with your own people. You know, sometimes, as you have done, that framework needs to be tweaked a little bit for the specific needs of the community. So I'm going to pause there and see if you have some final thoughts that you'd like to share, some takeaways for our audience about what you've learned through your journey.
I've learned quite a bit before you go on this journey, take care of yourself first. Is immerse yourself in self-care. Is do the things. Allow yourself to put up some barriers. Say no. Get physical activity. Eat right. Get some sleep, too. Your body needs to be rested to be able to be functioned. Work through your grief, and then you'll know. Is be ready. If you think this journey is for you, take that next step. It may surprise you on how much it can actually heal you. Throughout this is as well, too, I do a lot of reading. That goes with my background and kind of the research studies I've had to do in both my undergrad and my graduate work. I get real attuned to just things that make you think. Recently, and I keep it in a copy in my car, and it was given to me by a very good mentor of mine when I asked, is, hey, do you have a copy of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning? So I got into that, and where I really get I'm passionate about is he says a few things, is talking about the meaning of life and how it changes and how we can make meaning even out of our utmost suffering. So Viktor Frankl describes that we can discover meaning in life in three different ways: by creating work or doing a deed, by the attitude we take towards unavoidable suffering. You know, things are going to happen in this world. Is not everything is unicorn and rainbows. There's going to be bad experiences. We tend to get stuck on them a little bit better. But the one that gets to me the most that he describes is by experiencing something or encountering someone. So you find meaning in this life by experiencing something such as goodness, truth, and beauty, or by experiencing nature or culture. Last but not least, by experiencing another human being in his or her very uniqueness, by loving them. And grief is love. We grieve so hard, and it takes us so much to get through this journey. Is the reason we grieve is because the love is there. Is it hurts because it's a good hurt, because we cared about this person so much that our pain from not having the connectedness anymore is shown through grief. But grief is the love for that individual.
Cool way to end our conversation, Christopher. Thank you so much. And yes, Viktor Frankl's work has been a profound element for people in their seek for purpose in life for generations. And I love those three things, because two of them are action-oriented, right? You're creating the thing or you're taking an action. And the third one is more you are experiencing, you are noticing, you are taking in and you are reflecting. And sometimes we skip over how important that part of meaning-making is. So thank you so much. All right, so this has been super. I deeply appreciate you making time to do this with me today. How can people find you and your work if they want to learn more about what you're doing?
Right now we're on social media on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. So it's Military Veterans and Survivors of Suicide Loss. You can look it up there. You can like the page. Shoot me a note on there, and the details are there. And so I look forward to connecting with a lot of people and hearing your stories on how you've gone through your grief and what more as a military community or veterans that we can do to help each other.
Cool. Great. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I sure did. And I look forward to crossing paths with you, Christopher, in the many ways that our lives overlap here. If you want to hear more episodes, please go to the Hope Illuminated podcast. You can find us on my website, SallySpencerThomas.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us at Blog Talk Radio. Just find us. And when you get there, especially if you're on iTunes, go ahead and subscribe, leave a rating and review. That is super important for other people to find us when the algorithms of iTunes can pop us up higher in the feed when people do that. And also, I really just want to hear your opinion, like what you liked, what you didn't like, what we should do more of. If you have a suggestion of someone that we should be interviewing, please, please send them my way. If you want to get a little heads up on what's happening, please sign up for my newsletter. Again, at SallySpencerThomas.com. Each month I come out with here's what's going on, my Twitter chats, the blogs, the podcasts. I travel a lot, so maybe we could meet up for coffee somewhere, and I tell you where I'm speaking. So please sign up, and then you'll also learn more about some of the great resources that I try to lift up, like Christopher's peer support group and some other things. So in closing, let me just share our motto: open your heart, challenge your thinking, and take action to save lives. Together we can restore dignity and sustain a passion for living.
It's just 2 weeks out, and we've got your gifts at Macy's One Day Sale. With over 25,000 deals of the day, in-store and online, like PJs for the whole fam, now $4.99 to $19.99. Have a jet setter on your gift list? Samsonite luggage is 60 to 65% off. How about a home chef? Give a KitchenAid Classic Stand Mixer for just $189.99. Tuesday and Wednesday at Macy's. Savings off sale prices. Exclusions apply. Macy's Star Rewards members can earn towards Star Money. Ask your store associate or visit Macy's.com/Star Money for details. It's just 2 weeks out, and we've got your gifts at Macy's One Day Sale. With over 25,000 deals of the day, in-store and online, like PJs for the whole fam, now $4.99 to $19.99. Have a jet setter on your gift list? Samsonite luggage is 60 to 65% off. How about a home chef? Give a KitchenAid Classic Stand Mixer for just $189.99. Tuesday and Wednesday at Macy's. Savings off sale prices. Exclusions apply. Macy's Star Rewards members can earn towards Star Money. Ask your store associate or visit Macy's.com/Star Money for details.